This is Mayo Clinic Radio, the only show that gives you the chance to ask your questions to Mayo Clinic experts. We'll take you beyond the headlines to explain what developments in medicine mean to you. Join the conversation by phone, Twitter, Facebook, or radio.mayoclinic.org. Now, with this week's program, here are your hosts, Dr. Tom Shives and Tracy McRae.
From the Mayo Clinic, Rochester, Minnesota campus, I'm Dr. Tom Shives.
And I'm Tracy McRae.
Welcome, everyone, to Mayo Clinic Radio on the Mayo Clinic News Network. Everyone is concerned and talking about the Ebola virus. And this week, the World Health Organization says it has become a public health risk in other countries. That is, countries where there has not so far been an actual case of Ebola. The WHO went on to say that every country where there has been an outbreak of the disease should declare a national emergency. This is already, by the way, the longest and most deadly outbreak since the virus was first identified way back in 1976. 1,000 people so far have died of the Ebola virus, and there are more expected to die in the not-too-distant future.
Joining us by telephone is an internationally recognized Ebola expert, Dr. Pratish Tosh. Good morning, Dr. Tosh.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for having me.
Tell us, what is Ebola, the Ebola virus?
Sure. Ebola is a virus among the type of viruses that cause what we call viral hemorrhagic fever. And these are very aggressive infections. Thankfully, they don't happen very often, and usually it's in very isolated, remote areas, and often you're coming from some sort of animal reservoir. But these are very, very deadly outbreaks when they do occur. And Ebola is perhaps the most widely known of them. But certainly when we have Ebola outbreaks, these are often very, very deadly.
You say hemorrhagic. This must cause some bleeding somewhere?
It tends to, in that people will often have some sort of symptoms of say, diarrhea, nausea, vomiting initially. But then over time, very little time, could go very, very sick. And it really affects some of the ability of the blood and the body to clot and things like that. And so people start having blood loss. And sometimes you'll see bleeding from the eyes and the mouth, as well as bloody diarrhea. And it can be pretty horrific.
So it was first identified in 1976. What is it that at this time in history is making it so deadly?
Yeah, it's a little bit of a double-edged sword in terms of industrialization, in that when you're talking about the deadliness of the outbreak, most outbreaks in the 70s and 80s, which were sort of happened in a village in Africa, the term would be burn itself out, which is a euphemism for everyone who would have contacted it would have died very quickly.
Sure.
Before passing it on. And so our case fatality rate, the number of people who were infected who actually die, are often in the 90% range. However, what we're seeing now is closer to the 50 to 60% range. And so even, which is likely related to people actually getting access to healthcare and being able to get some of the support, the blood products and things like that in order to actually survive the infection. But then again, there comes this double-edged sword that with the industrialization, now people who are infected are coming into larger population areas and perhaps because of commerce, bringing themselves into contact with other people and thereby actually spreading it to more people. So even though we have a lower case fatality rate than we do historically, this is the largest Ebola outbreak that's ever been documented because people are more mobile. So the industrialization has been a double-edged sword.
And how has it spread? I mean, it's not that easy to get this, is it?
No, you're absolutely right. It's really, it's direct contact with blood and body fluids, and it's not a casual contact with somebody who, as they just came back from West Africa. It is really direct contact with the blood or body fluid, often on a mucosal exposure. And it's not just people who...
You mean like the eyes or the nose?
Yeah. Like the eyes or the nose, or often, unfortunately, needle sticks and things like that. You've got to remember, in West Africa, healthcare is not similar to what we are doing here, and so they're often using needles. But people are not actually contagious until they are sick, which is different from things like influenza, where people can actually spread it before they get ill.
Sure.
Usually, when people are actually contagious, they are not just having fevers and are sick, but usually very sick by the time they're actually contagious.
So part of the big problem is in these countries where this is spreading is there's not a good healthcare delivery, I don't know, for them to be able to safely be treated.
And that's part of the issue, is that what we're seeing is a lot of healthcare transmission of this in places where they really don't have the infrastructure for hospital infection control. You know, what we would do if we would see a case here, would maybe one would wear just a gown, gloves, as well as a mask and eye protection, and that is sufficient to protect people and also have a high index of suspicion. If somebody is coming in with similar symptoms, really put them in that isolation up front before you know for sure. And that sort of infrastructure for infection control is unfortunately still in development in West Africa.
And there really, you talk about treatment, but there's no specific treatment other than supportive, right?
And that's really it. Right now, in terms of approved treatments, it is supportive treatment, and you know, giving them the blood products they need to help them. If they need blood, to give it to them. If they need platelets, to give it to them. If they need clotting factors, to give it to them and sort of support their blood pressure, support their lungs through the infection until their body is able to heal itself and get better.
There is, you can easily diagnose it, though. There is a test for the Ebola virus, correct?
There are tests for the Ebola virus. Right now, the CDC, Centers for Disease Control and Prevention in Atlanta, are the ones that do all of the tests. And if someone is to be tested, it gets sent to them. But yeah, it is testable.
So what you're saying, did you say then that the flu virus is more, I don't know, is that more dangerous than the Ebola when you put them up head to head?
Well, to answer that question, for many reasons, the answer is yes, influenza for worldwide, just because it's more easily transmitted and certainly historically has killed more people than I believe any other infection in human history. And even though Ebola is sort of horrific to watch, it doesn't really, it basically kills people too quickly. And they don't transmit until they're very, very sick. And so even though, unfortunately, 1,000 people have died so far in since March when the outbreak began, it is not expected that this would be a worldwide pandemic of this.
And what about America? People that are diagnosed with Ebola, or they come back to America, how dangerous is this in our country? We have a completely different medical system.
That's exactly right. And I want to emphasize 3 points with regard to that. So first of all, there's really minimal risk to the community in the United States, meaning that the outbreak in West Africa it's unlikely to extend into the United States, where we would have community transmission from person to person. The things that happen in West Africa that lead to, say, a family member who comes sick, but the family members are the ones taking care of them in their house and taking care of sort of their diarrhea and the vomit and things like that, and then you get this transmission. Well, in the United States, they would go to a hospital, and so you would have far less transmission. I wouldn't expect the community really to be at risk, and the CDC is trying to echo this more and more. The other piece there is, well, what about in the hospitals? And hospitals in the United States, there is a possibility that somebody within, say, the incubation period could come over and then develop infection here. And so hospitals in the United States need to have systems in place so that they can find out who might have Ebola, or at least who may have symptoms consistent with and travel consistent with it, and make sure they're on the right isolation precautions to prevent transmission to the healthcare workers. And the last piece of this is that, you know, there's really minimal risk to the community. The hospitals certainly can do something, and I would not expect there to be any healthcare transmission. But now it gets back to, maybe now we can shift the focus back to what's happening in West Africa and try to actually do the routine epidemiology things that are able to actually stop the outbreak there.
All right. No reason for us to be too worried about this, at least yet. Dr. Pratish Tosh, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.